From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The country is in a grave economic crisis. It's a presidential election year. Does the campaign indicate how the ship of state will navigate the treacherous waters that lie ahead? I'm talking about the year 1932, the Great Depression. The Republican incumbent president was Herbert Hoover, arguably the most well-prepared, internationally experienced, intellectually astute chief executive in modern American history. When Hoover spoke on national radio about unemployment relief, he appealed to a spirit of self-help by communities and local government.
Everyone who aids to the full extent of his ability is giving support to the very foundations of our democracy. Everyone who from a sympathetic heart gives to these services is giving hope and courage to some deserving family. Everyone who aids in this service will have lightened a beacon of help on a stormy coast of human adversity.
President Hoover's opponent was the Democratic governor of New York State, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people. This is more than a political campaign. It is a call to arms. Give me your help not to win votes alone, but to win in this crusade to restore America to its own people.
Roosevelt actually coined the phrase New Deal in that acceptance speech at the Democratic Convention. Historian David Kennedy writes about the 1932 presidential campaign and about the Depression in his book Freedom from Fear, and he joins us from Stanford, California. Welcome to the program, Professor Kennedy.
Thanks, Robert. It's good to be here with you.
During that campaign, did anyone know what FDR had in mind by a New Deal?
Well, I think, frankly, FDR did, and some of his closest advisors did. But I think the record is clear that he did not disclose the full panoply of measures that he had in mind during the 1932 campaign, not least of all because it was crystal clear that this was a Democratic year. The Democrats could have nominated the local dog catcher, probably would have triumphed over Herbert Hoover. So from a tactical point of view, there was really no very large incentive for Roosevelt to be terribly specific. He needed to keep all of his options open and to be able to respond to the fluidity of events. But in my own mind, and I think I can prove it in the record, actually, Roosevelt had long been evolving a full-scale strategy for the fundamental reform of American institutions. And he had that very much in his mind well before 1932.
Was anyone in doubt as to what Herbert Hoover would have done if he had somehow succeeded in getting elected to a second term?
Well, Hoover elected to a second term is just about impossible to imagine. But, you know, if Herbert Hoover had been elected the first time that he considered running for president, which is in 1920, it's at least arguable that Hoover, who, after all, had cast his first presidential ballot for Theodore Roosevelt's Progressive Party in 1912, and Hoover considered himself the legatee of that great progressive reform tradition, had he been elected in 1920, it's at least arguable that he would have put in place sufficient reforms to have cushioned this country from the shock of the Great Depression, the Depression when it happened, maybe preventing it from becoming the capital G, capital D Great Depression.
As for FDR, there is a moment in 1932 when he seems to put in a good word for cutting back government expenditures or balancing the federal budget. Is he just trying to humor conservative Democrats at that moment?
No, I think he was honoring what was still, even in his own mind to a certain extent, the regnant orthodoxy about how governments should behave in the face of a crisis like this. The whole universe of economic thinking, policy thinking, was about to be revolutionized, not least of all because of John Maynard Keynes. But Keynes' great work, The General Theory of Interest and Employment and Money, only is published in 1936, I believe. So those ideas have not yet been fully articulated. So it's long forgotten now. But in fact, one of the proposals that Roosevelt made in the campaign was to cut government spending by at least 15%. Of course, that didn't happen. But it's a marker of how powerful was the grip of that kind of economic orthodoxy on the minds of even people like Roosevelt.
These two presidents who ran against each other in 1932, FDR, who now enjoys a monument in Washington, D.C., of the scope of Washington, Jefferson, and Lincoln, and Herbert Hoover, who became kind of a punchline symbolizing the ineptitude of government confronted with the crisis. They're very different characters. You describe their different personalities by how differently they might, how Hoover would receive, say, a banker at the White House, as opposed to how FDR might entertain a visitor at the White House after he became president.
Well, it was said of Hoover that you could name any county in the United States and he could tell you what were the leading financial institutions in that county and what their balance sheets looked like and so on and so forth. Whereas it was allegedly a parlor trick that Roosevelt would pull off with visitors to the Oval Office. He would ask them to draw a line across a map of the United States, and then he would trace his finger along the line and tell you who were the leading political figures in each county that the line passed through. The story may be apocryphal, but it illustrates a very fundamental point, I think. Hoover was a technician. He was an engineer by training and temperament and disposition. Roosevelt was a politician, and Roosevelt was a master politician. He knew how the system worked. He knew the secrets of the human heart. He knew how to make people do what he wanted them to do. And those turned out to be priceless gifts in the face of this great calamity called the Great Depression.
It is remarkable to think of someone becoming president, granted, during this terrible economic crisis of the Great Depression, and yet even so, being able to conceive of completely reworking the institutions of the federal government and changing the way Americans would relate to their government. What was it? What was the piece of FDR's DNA or whatever that enabled him to approach the national life of the country with such a, with such a vivid imagination of how it might change?
Well, I think in the last analysis, you know, these questions of personal character and quality are terribly mysterious and impenetrable. I do think Roosevelt had, and it had been bred into him from his earliest days, a sense of noblesse oblige, a sense that he was a steward or should become a steward for the welfare of his country and his countrymen. And for him, that the central tenet of that general outlook was the notion of security. He had these ideas in his mind for a long time before the Depression came along. He knew it would take a crisis to create the political space for him to get this accomplished, and the Depression provided him with even more space than he bargained for, we might say. But he did get a lot of that accomplished.
Well, Professor Kennedy, thank you very much for talking with us about it.
Thank you, Robert.
It's David Kennedy, the author of Freedom from Fear, The American People in Depression and War, 1929 to 1945. It's part of the Oxford History of the United States, and Professor Kennedy spoke to us from Stanford, California.